the point of this is to provide the best facts-driven show that we possibly can.
Ideally, you have a glue guy who is good.
Hashtag glue guy, hashtag locker room guy. You can't go sign Bobby Holik to $1 trillion. You can't do these things.
Very satisfying.
The absolute best NYR show in town.
This is the Liberty Blue. Rangers Podcast. With Andrew Shelby. And Nick Zeraris.
Rangers fans, welcome to Liberty Blue, the essential New York Rangers podcast. I'm Andrew Chumley, alongside Nick Zeraris. And Nick, baby, it's the best time of the year. The NHL playoffs are here. The Rangers start game one against the Caps on Sunday at 3 p.m. I can't wait for this, man.
That's why we play the games. The 82-game season is long. It's grueling. It's been massively devalued by this playoff format, which does not reward regular season success. If anything, this playoff format condemns regular season success. On no planet should the Avalanche and Jets be playing each other in the first round. That feels really unfair that one of those two teams is going to go home off the bat. You could argue the same thing in the East, where the Islanders, are they really, you know, deserving of being in third place in the Metro? Not really, no. So the journey has only just begun. It feels insane that you do all that work for those 82 games. And yeah, the Rangers are going to get to hang regular season champions 2023-2024 next to the regular season champions 2014-2015. But this isn't soccer. Your regular season results are nice. It doesn't particularly matter. Ultimately, it's challenging to compartmentalize that, to put that behind you and mentally kind of prepare yourself for that, because it doesn't matter effectively now. You are going to go into this series, and the hockey playoffs have the highest variance of any playoffs of the four major sports in North America. Anything can happen, even to the Rangers. So buckle up.
I can't wait for this. It was a journey and a half to watch them all season. Again, they're the best team in the league, and we've talked ad nauseum about their positives and their negatives. But this is, the playoffs are just such a different beast, because, you know, we're going to be clenching every second, every shift, every time Laviolette brings out Miller and Drew Bergeron, we're going to be yelling that much louder. Or every time Panarin makes this incredible pass, we're going to be yelling that much louder. It's there's genuinely nothing like it in all of sports. And, you know, I guess people of other fandoms can say what they want about their sports, but like the thing about playoff hockey that kind of separates it from everything else is not only is it just every single shift matters so much, but also the inherent randomness of the sport, where, again, like we talked about before, there's no other sport can you take a shot, it bounce off of the entire, you know, nine other people, and it just bounces its way in the back of the net. It's a random, lucky, silly, stupid, incredible sport that is so much fun to watch. And tomorrow is Saturday, and it starts the playoffs for other teams, and I can't wait to watch those with not sweat dripping down my forehead. So that's going to be fun, and the sweating will continue for me Sunday at 3 p.m.
Yeah, we got the Knicks too. There's a lot going on, man. We've got
the Knicks are playing. I will be at the Garden on Monday. Oh man, I can't wait.
It's unfortunate that probably the Knicks are going to lose out on the highest ceiling they could have possibly had, because Randall's not going to be able to play. But pivoting back to hockey and this conversation, starting out with the big ideas, I think we're reaching a point now in the league, this isn't unique to the Rangers, where offense is driving everything. I don't think it is particularly viable anymore to try and win with defense and to some extent with goaltending. You know, Vasilevsky was the first goalie who making more than $8 million a year to ever win the Stanley Cup. And that was the first year of the extension, which was the second time they went back to back. So a little bit of an outlier situation there. But you look at some of the teams that have won cups in recent years, Colorado, Vegas, St. Louis. You could even argue the Penguins both times in 16 and 17, where they kind of created goaltending in the aggregate, you know, and there are some teams who are still trying to do that. You know, Edmonton has employed that strategy, Toronto, Carolina. That mindset is challenging to overcome, and that roster construction at points is difficult to overcome, and the Rangers have always been the other way. Granted, they've had, you know, generational talents in Lundqvist and one of the best, if not the best, goalies in the league in Shesterkin during his time period. But for the purposes of this conversation, these playoffs, I was listening to Dmitry Filipovich's podcast earlier in the week, and one of the topics they talked about was, would you rather have an elite power play or an elite penalty kill? And historically, it had been, as long as you were top 10-ish in both, you generally speaking fared pretty well in the postseason. But over the last handful of years, it's skewed more towards power play being more important. And I think that's because the average NHL player has just gotten a lot better in the last 5 years. So you really need to hammer those opportunities. And that's really the first big theme here. I know we talk a lot about the Rangers' 5-on-5 woes. Washington is one of the few teams that's worse than the Rangers at 5-on-5. But this will be the one series where even if they're not going at 5-on-5, the Rangers should be able to have their way on special teams. They absolutely third best penalty kill, third best power play, and their best players are just frankly better than Washington's best players. That is an area where the Rangers can dramatically exploit the talent disparity in this series.
This should be quick and easy. Should, which the Rangers historically love to not do. They love making things hard for themselves with these long series that only makes them more tired and more banged up. And by the time they get to the conference finals or even the finals, they are exhausted, broken, beaten down mentally, physically. They cannot hang on for dear life anymore. And then they fall apart at the very end. This is the series where the Rangers need to dominate and dominate early. This is a series where the Rangers need to show up in game one. Panarin needs to show out. Fox needs to show out. The big stars need to come here, especially because Panarin had his struggles last playoffs. He knows the narratives. He knows about, people talk about how, I don't show up. He knows. I promise you he knows. Game one and early on in the series is going to be crucial for this team to really prove to not only everybody else but to themselves, hey, we really are the best team in the league. We really are the strongest team in the playoffs. And this team that we're about to play right now isn't very good. They have a negative 1,000 goal differential, and they haven't been great all year. If we're not going to beat them in 4 or 5 games, then who are we going to beat in 4 or 5 games? Let's show out here, beat them nice and quick, and then we move on. We wait, and we sit up, feet up on the couch, watching everybody else kill each other while we sit with our popcorn and watch them do it.
I was talking about this with somebody yesterday. I went and did a hit to talk about the series on someone's show, and the way I described the talent disparity was, if this were gym class and you lined up the Rangers and the Capitals against the wall, how many guys are you picking before you would take the first Capital? Because I think there's a real argument you're taking at least 4 Rangers or 5 Rangers even before you would consider taking the first Capital. And who's the first Capital you're taking? Charlie Lindgren? He's probably had the best season, but being that Shesterkin's already going to be one of the first 4 picks, you wouldn't take a second goalie. So maybe it's even 6 or 7. Like, you're taking Fox, Panarin, Shesterkin, probably Trocheck, probably Lafreniere, and then maybe we could talk Ovechkin, maybe we can talk Dylan Strome. But at that point, I'd probably still take Zibanejad over Dylan Strome. For as much as I make fun of Zibanejad's ineffectiveness at 5-on-5, he's better than Dylan Strome.
I don't disagree. It's tough to argue, who you would take, because Ovechkin, for he's 38. He hasn't really been a defensive stalwart ever, but especially recent years, my man has not done much of anything in the defense in the defensive end. But he's been on fire since the All-Star break. He's been scoring a lot, and I think that more than anything, he's kind of proven to himself of like, hey, like I can still do this, because he was really cold for long stretches of the season early on. He had a long, you know, few games here and there of just not scoring and not contributing much, and that didn't help the Capitals win games. And now, because he's scoring goals, what do you know? The Capitals have started winning games, and now they're in the playoffs. So I don't know, you know, where in the lineup you take Ovechkin. Sure, you would take Shesterkin and Panarin and Fox over Ovi. Maybe you take him four because of how scary he is as an offensive threat, even at age 38. You could split hairs and argue that at that point. But yeah, the Rangers definitely have, bare minimum, the best three players in this series. If you want to argue that Ovi's four, you can. You know, I can entertain that. But Shesterkin's better than anybody on the Caps. So is Fox, and so is Panarin. And you need these three top guys to step up here and make this series nice and easy.
So the main reason I feel so confident, and I was talking about this on the show yesterday that I did the appearance on, I think a lot of the time you got to walk yourself through all the scenarios, because these playoff series, they take on lives of their own, and you got to try and consider every single variable. I'm sure there will inevitably be a moment where Tom Wilson and Matt Rempe are nose to nose after a whistle, and the broadcast will be losing their mind, and nothing will come of it. They'll get separated, but that'll be lingering in the air. That will linger over this series. I think Ovechkin's track record of playing well against the Rangers in the postseason will hang over this series. I can still remember being at the Game 2 in 2015, where he skated directly between McDonough and Girardi. Girardi tripped him. Ovechkin fell to his knees, still went bar down out, beat Lundqvist clean glove side, and just got back up like it was the most simple thing in the world. Ovechkin will at some point make someone on the Rangers look stupid. That's just kind of how these playoff series go. You know, when you have that ability to be that dynamic, you are going to be able to make a moment or two happen. The big thing for the Rangers is that they have more of those guys. But laying out the scenarios, if you want to be a fatalist and you want to talk about what's the path to Washington prolonging this series, forcing six, forcing seven games, or God forbid winning this series, the way they get there is very straightforward. They're going to need to steal a game in overtime, and they're going to need Charlie Lindgren to steal them a game. That's how they can get two wins. I even as confident as I am in this Rangers team, I can very easily see the Rangers failing to show up in one of these games, kind of playing flat and Washington eking one out. And Charlie Lindgren's the difference there. And then anything can happen in overtime. So that's how you get to a game six. I genuinely think the best case scenario for Washington is forcing six games. More than that, I would genuinely be impressed, because they just don't have the guys. So with that in mind, with that scenario in mind of the only way to really get there is by shooting yourself in the foot, your biggest goal here has to be to minimize your risk and to force Washington to beat you. When the Rangers have gotten into weird funks this year, it's because they've killed themselves. You know, I've pointed out the Carolina game and the Vancouver game back in January as really kind of the telltale, the worst case scenario for the Rangers. Washington doesn't have the talent of those two teams, but if you give teams enough opportunities when you mess up, eventually they're going to put them in the net. This is an area where the Rangers have historically, they've really had moments in the playoffs where they have just shot themselves in the foot for no reason other than, if you want to call it nerves, if you want to call it the randomness of the postseason. But again, like the main theme here, the Rangers have a real talent gap between them and Washington. They should be able to control large stretches of play, and it's just a matter of making it happen.
The key word that you use there is should. And that's one of the words that always scares me about this sport. Is hockey is the one sport of the major ones in the US, and I guess North America, that the best teams win the least of the major sports. you take a look at basketball or football or, you know, or what have you, and the best teams, especially early on, are usually the ones that come out on top. There are, you know, outliers like the Knicks in 99 as the 8th seed moving on to the final. That is very rare in basketball. Usually the 1 seed, the 2 seed.
You respect even, Jason Richardson and the Believe right, Warriors.
Relax
you respect
there.
The Warriors.
Yeah, okay. I will. They're not even the playoffs, sick. They're out.
I'm talking about the 2007.
The
2007 Warriors. They beat the 60 win Mavericks.
I understand.
Dirk
I
mean, was listen, the MVP.
Listen. I'm not saying that it doesn't happen. I'm saying it happens rarely, at least a lot rarer than it happens. You know, it happens a lot rarer than it does in the NHL, where because of the inherent randomness of the sport, you get series like Florida Boston, where Florida just happens to win all of the overtime games, and because of that they win the series because Bobrovsky was inhuman for that series, and then the next couple after that, and then they move, and then they go on to the final. Like, this sport is, you can't, it's unpredictable at its core. The fundamental DNA of hockey is that you really can't predict 100% of things that are going to happen over the course of a game. Hopefully, this doesn't impact the final outcome of the series. Hopefully, the Rangers are able to control most of that. Hopefully, they're able to, you know, score early and score often and kind of put the pedal to the metal and not let Washington taste blood in the series at all. Because again, like, if the Caps, let's say, play game one to a draw, win in overtime in game one, so now they have a lot of confidence. Now the Rangers are like, okay, well, this team is a lot worse than we are, and they just won? What's going on? And now, you know, I don't think this is going to happen, but that you could see a scenario in which sticks get tighter, the grip, you know, you're gripping the stick a little too tight, you're forcing passes, you're forcing mistakes, and the Caps can capitalize on that. These things can happen. So it's, again, it's up to the Rangers to show up here early and essentially eliminate all worry and all, you know, narratives that, oh, the Caps could actually do this.
Oh, of course. The longer you give a team life and the longer they hang around, the more likely weird things will happen. And speaking of that idea, I think the other component to that is Washington has no expectations. Zero.
No.
They are coming into this series.
They're happy to be there.
With no pressure on them at all. They are coming into this series with the mindset of, we're going to see what happens. Maybe we can win a game or two. Maybe we make the Rangers sweat. And if the Rangers start sweating, then we have ourselves a series. Low expectations help. You know, the year the Capitals won the Stanley Cup, that was probably the weakest iteration of the Capitals in 4 or 5 years. They went into that postseason. Low expectations and weird things happen in the course of a long postseason. This team is not nearly as talented as that iteration, but for the general idea, weird things can happen when you let teams start to believe in themselves. So transitioning a little more towards the actual players on the ice and the mechanics within it, I said this at the beginning of March, and I'll say it again. I think the Rangers' single most important player, if they are going to go on a deep playoff run, is K'Andre Miller. I think if the Rangers are going to go where they need them to go, he is going to have to be that number two defenseman. And I know he's not going to play on the first pair with Fox, but for the purposes of thinking this out in your mind, you know, when Tampa Bay went back to back, it was largely in part because that McDonough pair was so effective in the minutes they had. And when you can separate your best defenseman and your second best defenseman from each other, and you can have one of those guys on the ice for 40 minutes of the game, that's when you can really start to take advantage of matchups and start wearing away at the team. And furthermore, on that thought, if you can separate Fox from Miller, which they're going to, you also then have the luxury of, in your deployments, of matching them with forwards. If you need to get Fox with Panarin because you need to tilt the ice to get the offense going, you have that luxury because you can still roll Miller out there with Miller and whomstever, whether it's Schneider or Trouba. It looks like it's going to be Schneider at least to start, but you can roll out whoever you'd like for the other 40 minutes. And then, you know, you take 5 to 10 minutes out of that for special teams. And then you're really going to only ask your third pair to play, you know, 12, 13 minutes.
And the math becomes a lot more palatable for you when it comes to strategizing. If Miller is playing at his ceiling, he's more than capable of being that type of player. He's got to do it, though.
That's the million-dollar question of it's interesting because he's shown in spurts that he can. And that's, I think, the most frustrating thing about all of this is we've seen him do it well. And then he would turn around and have like the next three games where he is brutal. It is in his own zone. And that's the kind, like that is more frustrating than knowing if a player is good or bad at the sport, where like you can consistently expect them to either be good at something or bad at something. Kendrick Miller has shown to be somebody who has the talent to be really good and has had stretches of a week or, you know, a couple of weeks or multiple games or multiple shifts where he is the best defenseman out there. He's got an active stick. He's making the right plays. His feet are moving. And then he turns around, like, and then the next stretch of games and shifts, he looks like he's ever played the sport before. And that is frustrating from the standpoint of I don't know what you're going to get out of him game to game. He is the X factor in a lot of ways because you don't know which version of Kendrick Miller you're going to get on a given night. And that is one of the things that hopefully obviously that gets sorted out, because if Kendrick Miller can look like the Kendrick Miller that we know he can look, this is a really dangerous team. With that blue line and Kendrick Miller looking like the best version of himself, that is one of the best blue lines in the sport. But if Kendrick Miller looks like the shaky defenseman that we've seen with Miller and other iterations of that pairing, where he doesn't really know where he is on the ice, or his partner is on the ice, where the puck is, where he's supposed to be in relation to the play, where we've seen the highlights and the replays of him out in Chicago when the game is in Dallas and the team is scoring goals against the Rangers and my man's is on in a different zip code. We've seen those plays as well. And it's really important that Kendrick Miller figures out at least most of the time, or at least more than he has in a regular season, of, hey, this is where I'm supposed to be and this is what I'm supposed to do, as opposed to the latter.
A lot of it comes down to confidence. I think that's really what... I think that's probably the most challenging aspect of any talent evaluation, is trying to understand how a player is playing in relation to how they feel about how they're playing. Because when Miller's right, he is skating the puck out of danger. He is getting involved in the rush. He is overlapping in the offensive zone and crashing towards the net. And just, he looks significantly more engaged when he's feeling good about his game. When he gets into trouble is when he's in the corners and he's leaning and he's not using his reach. He's not using his size to separate the opposition from the puck. And part of that, I think, stems from not wanting to make a mistake. We talk about how a player plays and who they play with. And we've addressed how him and Trouba play with each other and their inability to communicate with each other, passing off defensive responsibilities. It's been a recurring theme for 3 years at this point. That's not going to improve. I think where Miller can be more impactful, and where if him and Schneider are going to work the way we think they can, it's going to ultimately come down to Schneider is going to win a lot of the pucks. It's going to be his responsibility to recover the dump-ins, to win those battles below the boards. And he's going to be the one who has to get the puck to Miller. And then Miller's got to skate it out of danger. When Miller uses his skating, that's when he's most engaged. And that's when he's the most dangerous. That's when he's the most active, is when he has the puck on his stick and he feels like he can make a play. He gets into trouble when he is not using his ability, when he is trying to pass the puck out of danger, when he's doing this long alley-oop pass that goes out into the neutral zone just to get off of the ice. Miller's the key for me. And then one other player I wanted to touch on here. I do think they need to figure out what they want to do as far as that first line right wing spot. It's not as important right now because they have such a so much more talent than Washington. But if there is any permutation of this lineup where they might be able to get just that much more out of 20 and 93, it's worth exploring. I don't think Hedl's going to play probably at least till like game 5 or 6, and that's a maybe for the first round. So I don't think he's the answer for first line right wing, though he could be. It feels like that line has something else it needs to tap into. And finding whoever it is, you know, you have the luxury, and this is kind of pseudo luxury because Barkley Goodrow playing center isn't ideal, but you know, you have that extra center there where if you wanted to play a center lower in your lineup on the wing with them, you do have that luxury. But if Zibanejad and Kreider are what they are and they can't get to another gear, I do think the Rangers offense will have trouble scoring the further they go in the playoffs. And it's just simple math. You know, Trocheck, Panarin, and Lafreniere cannot score all of the goals on this run. It's not tenable.
I think they can get away with it against Washington. And when I say get away with it, I mean, they have been getting away with it the entire season. They're only the best team in the NHL, according to the standings, right? But come playoff time, when teams are you're not playing the Pittsburghs we could talk about Pittsburgh at a later point, but like you're not playing the Senators, you're not playing these teams that have nothing to play for, or they're clearly not going anywhere, or this, that, and the other. You are playing the best talent in the NHL for 4 rounds. If you want to win the Stanley Cup, you have to beat the best of the best 16 times, and then you win it all. That's the formula to win the Stanley Cup. So you can't rely on one line to do it 16 times. You just can't.
Nope.
It sounds very obvious, right? When you say it out loud, it's like, oh yeah, of course you need more than one line to score, you know, to win you playoff hockey games. But the Rangers have done that during the regular season from time to time, where they just go, okay, Panarin, Trocheck, and Lafreniere, go score 4 goals. And then they do. And then the game is over because that's what they did. In the playoffs, you need contributions from everybody else. And the third line can do it with Cooley and Vizi and Wennberg. Wennberg has been great, I feel like.
Yes.
I feel like he's been great, especially defensively and on the forecheck, essentially making the other team uncomfortable whenever he's on the ice. He's been really good in that role, and I really enjoyed watching him with that, especially his white stick. I mean, like, the only white stick in the league, and my man's is look at maybe I should get a white stick and play like him. But that's the formula is simple. If you really want to win the Stanley Cup, you need everybody contributing offensively, and maybe Hedl comes back. I would think he like Colin Stevenson tweeted out that he has got the top six jersey on. So if the idea is, okay, well, you know, just beat the Caps early and round 2, game 1, you're going to have Kreider, Zibanejad, and Hedl as your first line, we're cooking. Now, again, it's going to take Hedl a while to get back to the Hedl that we know and that we've seen him dominate in, especially a couple of years ago against Carolina, right? That kid line that got together. It's going to take him a while to get back to it, but I would still feel more confident in Hedl being that right winger on the top line, even with him at, I don't know, 85%, 90%, whatever it is, opposed to Ross LaVega, a guy who, yeah, he scored against Ottawa, but he was healthy scratched because that didn't work at all. And that's a concern for me. So at the end of the day, and also as an aside, have we ever seen a player who was ruled out for the entire season come back?
I'm trying to think. I feel like that's definitely happened. Tua didn't come back the third time after the 3 concussions 2 years ago, but it's definitely happened. I'll get to the statisticians on that one. The one stylistic thing I do worry about in this series is that Washington plays very passive. They are going to invite you to dump the puck in, They're going to want to turn this into a muck it up, drag it out style of game and series. They are going to want to minimize opportunities as much as they can. They're going to take the safe play because they have a talent disparity. When you're a little bit slower, when you're less talented, how do you make the other team muck it up? The key for Washington, and I think this will be the case in a couple of the series, and we're going to touch on the other series in a few minutes, but the key for Washington is going to be forcing the Rangers to play dump and chase, forcing the game into a slog, and making the Rangers make the simple play. The Rangers don't like making the simple play. Other than that third line, which, you know, you touched on Wennberg, him, Kako, and Cooley, or whomstever they put, if it's Brodzinski, whoever, that trio is very good at, they're very content to cycle, forecheck, work for their offense, even if they don't end up creating a good scoring chance. They want to do that. The other guys don't. You know, Panarin, Lafreniere, Trocheck, Zibanejad, Kreider, Roslovic, those guys aren't going to play dump and chase hockey. They are going to try and skate into that passive neutral zone structure, and they are going to turn the puck over, forcing passes to the middle, trying to get through that. I think that's really the one mental block and the strategy component of this that I'm very curious to see how it unfolds, because we've seen the Rangers run into this issue where when they have to play playoff style hockey against more structured teams, against more disciplined teams, their offense dries up. They aren't as good at working for their offense if they can't get, you know, 2, 3, 4 rush opportunities a period, because that's kind of, that's where it starts for them. They get those chances off of the rush. They're able to drive the net. They're able to get the goalie moving left to right. And even if it doesn't result in a score and a goal, they at least made the other team sweat. For the Rangers to play effectively in this series, and then same exact thing if they go on and win and they would play Carolina or the Islanders, same thing. Those two teams, aggressive forechecking, very structured in the neutral zone. They want to play dump and chase because they don't have necessarily the same foot speed and the high-end puck skills. For the Rangers to win this series, which I expect them to, they are going to have to accept it's going to have to be ugly hockey.
We talked about this last week. We talked about what the floor of this team is, and we mentioned how it has, the bare minimum is round two, the absolute bare minimum. If you lose to Washington, it is an unmitigated disaster, and there will be massive changes. This would be one of the most disastrous ends to the season in a long time. Last season included. You get the President's Trophy, and your first-round matchup is a team that has a negative 37 goal differential and a team that, by all accounts, is as mid as it gets, and you lose to them? Oh, there's going to be hell to pay if that happens. So the Rangers know this, and I think the Capitals know this as well, which might make them play with a little bit more, you know, I guess swagger, you could call it, like more confidence in their game because they don't have any pressure on them. Like you talked about earlier, Caps are just happy to be there. They are happy to, you know, the door closed right after they got in. They found a way to get into the stadium, and then the doors were locked, and then security said no more. They're happy to be there. The Rangers are the main attraction of this series. So and everybody, you know, everybody knows this here. Between both teams, it's up to the Rangers now to make this quick and easy, to essentially kill whatever early bugs or jitters or early, you know, rumors or storylines that might happen if they fall flat early. End this now, you know, quick and easy in 4 or 5 games. Get Hedl back. And now you're cooking in round two with the best team in the league, plus also Filip Hedl.
I really feel, and we were talking about this before we started recording, and we can use this as a segue into talking about the playoffs at large. It's now or never. It's really that straightforward. Yep. The Rangers are going to have Shesterkin on this contract for just next season. After next season, he's going to get a pay raise commiserate with how he's played, which is one of the 5 best goalies in the world. And the Rangers' financial flexibility will be further hamstrung. Lafreniere has played himself probably into the conversation of that medium, that medium to long term, 4 or 5 years, $7 or $8 million per year that'll walk him to unrestricted free agency. You need to figure out what you're doing with Kaapo Kakko. You need to figure out what you're doing with Barkley Goodrow. You need to figure out what you're doing with Jacob Trouba. And really quickly, you can see it's not going to last forever. The Rangers are getting their mulligan. Last year was a disappointment, categorically a disappointment. The organization acknowledges it was a disappointment, and they tweaked how they approached certain positions. You saw that in the offseason, whether it be backup goalie, whether it was Erik Gustafsson. They tweaked what they wanted to add to the group with the premise of, we're close, we need to get the vibes better, and the better vibes will unlock better play from our guys. Panarin came back like a man possessed, and that's really the driving force as to why. Panarin's probably never going to play this well ever again. Like, 49 goals, the 121, 122 points, whatever he ended up finishing with. One of the second best season by a Rangers forward ever. You're probably not getting that level of production. That's not to say he won't be good, but he's not going to be this good. And because he's been so good, it's elevated Vincent Trocheck. It's elevated and unlocked components of Alexis Lafreniere. You cannot guarantee you are going to ever have a group with this kind of juice again. You have opportunities to re-rack, and after this year, probably the year after that will be the hard reset where you're going to have to make some hard financial decisions and move some guys, but it's now or never. The East is as open as it's ever been. The Rangers have the regular season results to argue they're the best team in the East. Carolina has been the best team in the NHL since the trade deadline. Florida went to the Cup final last year and has plenty of high-end talent. The Rangers have a real argument they are the best team in the Eastern Conference. They probably won't play a team that's more talented than them till at least the conference final, if not the Cup final. Everything is there for them to have it. They have the looming clock ticking. The window for this specific group is closing. It really is now or never.
This is their best chance to win in a long time, and it could be their best chance to win for insert however many, you know, insert number here to come. Like, you don't get this kind of path often. We talked about this before, where the Rangers have a path high, like laid out in front of them. This is not a path where, oh, you know, you take a look at a team like Winnipeg, for example, right? Where their first round matchup is against the Colorado Avalanche. Okay, great. And then if they somehow manage to beat them, oh, they have to play the Dallas Stars or the Vegas Golden Knights. Yeah, good luck. Good luck getting the conference finals in one piece after those two series. The Rangers have an opportunity here to play a team that isn't Colorado, isn't Vegas, right? Isn't Tampa Bay. They have it. They have an opportunity here to make it easy for themselves moving forward. Because if they make it seven, they stress everybody out. You know, the longer these series go, the tougher it becomes to play down the road. This is their best opportunity to make this nice and easy and make everybody and watch everybody else kill each other. While they just have their popcorn and they're all together. They're watching the Islanders and the Hurricanes beating each other up in seven overtimes because the Islanders love nothing more than playing in overtime games. You know, the Rangers right now have the best path in front of them to go all the way. So if it's not now, when the path is as viable to them as it has been in a very long time, these paths don't come very often, and they don't appear, you know, these are like shooting stars. Like, these things don't happen all the time. The path to the cup is as easy as it could possibly ever be, which, again, I'm not saying it is easy, but the path could be so much harder than it currently is. If not now, when would you ever do it? It has to be now.
So, starting with the natural question, who's winning the series, how many games. I have the Rangers in five. I will probably bet the Rangers in five because it's actually a decent number, but I don't see a world where Washington makes this a series unless they get at least one overtime win and Charlie Lindgren goes crazy for one game. That's the only way this gets to six. The talent gap is too wide. There's a legitimate argument the Capitals are the worst team to make the playoffs in this format.
I have Rangers in five. I also, you know, I have predictions for every series, and yeah. I didn't predict one sweep because like it's unfair to the sport to predict a sweep. It's like even in series like this, because the sport is so fundamentally luck dependent a lot of times, I have a hard time predicting a sweep because like anything is possible, and I always, you know, I try to give as much leeway to other team as possible. The Rangers are easily the better team here. Rangers in five. If it's longer than that, that could be a problem.
So, Rangers win in five. We will bounce around. We'll go series by series. We'll try not to go too long because when we did this last year, it took like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Islanders, Hurricanes. The gap's even bigger between these two teams than it was last year. It took a total capitulation from the Hurricanes in game five for it to even go six games, how bad the Islanders were outplayed. The Islanders were a better team last year. Hurricanes in six again.
I think you're reading off my notes because I also had Carolina in six. The Islanders love nothing more than the play, you know, just hang on hockey for as long as they possibly can. You know, capitalize on their opportunities and just take it to overtime where anything can happen. That's been their game for the vast majority of the season. They love doing that. That's why they have so many overtime losses. They like, and they've had so many leads in the third period that they've blown or, you know, what have you. The Hurricanes are the better team. The Islanders love playing the hang on type of game, but Carolina is ultimately more talented, more dangerous. Carolina in six.
One thing I will say, the Islanders have played better since Waugh's taken over.
Sure.
I'm very curious to see if they keep riding Varlamov. I know he got, I think, six of the seven starts down the stretch to kind of play their way into the playoffs. I'm curious to see what they do in net there. But yeah, the talent gap is insane. And the Islanders have the second worst penalty kill in the entire league. And Carolina's got enough guys where if you give Carolina two power plays a game, and normal team scores one out of every four, the Hurricanes are going to run away with that series very quickly because the Islanders take a ton of penalties and their penalty kill stinks. I think there's a real chance that's the one sweep if there is one. I do think I have Carolina in six. Bruins, Leafs, it's a coin flip. I could go either way. I think the Leafs' high-end talent is better than the Bruins' high-end talent. The Bruins' goaltending situation, far and away better. I am going to pick the Leafs in seven. I don't feel good about it, but I just don't believe in that Bruins group. The forward talent's not there, and they really only have two defensemen I trust. And, you know, it would be very ironic for the Leafs to finally beat the Bruins in a playoff series after all the times they've had and they've missed.
I have Toronto at six. Okay. I think this is the year that Austin Matthews just goes ballistic. And he scored 69 nice goals in the regular season. He is not going to let Toronto lose this series. I think, if anything, coupled with Matthews and Nylander and even Tavares with his concrete skates, the Toronto Maple Leafs are just not going to lose to the Boston Bruins again. And I think the Bruins, especially, I mean, last season's collapse was so bad for them. They really, yeah, they have a lot of points, a lot of them, again, with that loser point. They're a good team. I'm not saying they're a bad team per se, but they are definitely not as dangerous as they have been in recent years. Maybe like I said in the video that we put out a couple weeks ago, where, you know, maybe because they don't have the pressure to succeed, maybe that makes them more dangerous because, you know, they're not gripping their sticks. They're not thinking about, oh, we have to win every battle, every shift of every game. Maybe this goes in the Boston's favor, but as of right now, at least on paper and the way Toronto's been playing, Toronto in six.
One last thing on that series. We've talked about the idea of low expectations. I do think that's one thing that might help the Bruins is that nobody really expects anything from them. They probably have a slight edge when it comes to coaching. The Leafs are better. They've played better this year. The Bruins are well constructed for the regular season, but repeatedly we have seen the faults with their roster construction come the playoffs. Last one in the East, Battle of Florida. I think the Panthers in six. I think the Panthers are definitely more talented than Tampa Bay. Kucherov can win one game by himself. I will definitely give Tampa Bay that. The only real way this becomes a series is if Vasilevsky goes from like the 905 goalie he's been since the start of March to like a 920. Then we might have something here. But barring Vasilevsky getting up a level, which, you know, he's coming off of major back surgery, I'm inclined to give the guy a pass for having a below average season. I don't really see a world where Tampa Bay can compete with Florida. I don't see a world where they can beat Florida. I shouldn't say compete, where they can beat Florida in a best of seven.
I have Florida in five. Yeah. The Florida Panthers are such a dangerous team. They have a really, really dangerous, not only forward group, their defense has been really good as well. Gustav Forsling is one of the best 5-on-5 defensemen in the entire NHL, and the Lightning thrive at 5-on-5. Yeah, their power play is really great, sure, but they're also a really good 5-on-5 team. And with Gustav Forsling on the ice, that mitigates a lot of that. And the Lightning are not nearly as deep as they have been in recent years. Yeah, Kucherov is still one of the best players in the league. Braden Point still also really good, and Stamkos is still there. This might be Steven Stamkos' last tenure, in a Lightning jersey, because he's going to be UFA. He's not really been super happy with how the Lightning have managed that aspect of his contract. So the Panthers are, by all accounts, on paper, stats-wise, eye test-wise, the much deeper and much stronger team. And even if Bobrovsky doesn't play as well as he has, in last year's playoffs, I don't think it's going to matter a ton unless he absolutely gets cratered. If he goes back to the worst case scenario of Bobrovsky, where beach balls are going in, then we have a problem. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think Bobrovsky is going to play at least well enough for them to win the series. And Tampa Bay just, I don't think, has enough in them this season to do much about it.
Shout out John Cooper. I know he's not going to get any votes for Coach of the Year, yeah, but the job he did with the Lightning, commendable. I mean, they looked dead at the beginning of March. Remember, Sergachev broke his leg against the Rangers.
Yeah.
They were, I want to say, 5 or 6 points back of that last playoff spot. And they had, one good defenseman in Hedman, who's still good, not nearly the player he used to be, but still a good player. One trustworthy defenseman. They weren't able to add anything particularly substantial at the deadline. They added Duclair and Matt Dumba. But other than that, genuinely one of the best coaching jobs in the entire league there. Speaking of great coaching jobs, we'll segue out west. We'll talk Nashville, Vancouver. This is a series I can see Nashville making hairy. I can see Nashville making Vancouver uncomfortable. I think Vancouver's relative lack of playoff inexperience, I think Nashville's low expectations, I think Nashville being a veteran group, multiple guys who've won Stanley Cups, being comprised of the leadership of that group. Saros hasn't been nearly as good as he's been the last couple of years, but still an above average player. The Predators can and have the luxury of splitting Roman Yossi and Ryan McDonagh at times, though they played together a lot this year, which gives them that 2/3 of the game split we were talking about in regards to Adam Fox and K'Andre Miller. I'd argue McDonough's had one of the better seasons of his career, at 35 on a pretty middling team. Nashville probably doesn't have the depth, but Vancouver's depth hasn't been great. Elias Lindholm is a good player, but it just hasn't stuck there. He's played a bit with Nils Höglander and Dakota Joshua, but I think that's a series where Nashville's experience, their style of play, they're just something about that series screams out. Vancouver's just kind of happy to be here. They're a little bit ahead of schedule. They cooled off down the back half of the season. Demko's coming off of an injury. I can see a world where Nashville makes that sketchy. I'm going to pick Vancouver in seven, but I think Nashville's definitely going to make them sweat.
I can see a world in which that happens. I'm not here to wholeheartedly disagree with you. I did pick Vancouver in five, only because the Preds went on that massive heater at around the deadline where they just beat everybody in their path at all times. But if you take, you know, you take that stretch and you kind of remove from the equation, they've been an okay team. They haven't been a team that scares other teams for the most part, and they're not a bad team. They're pretty decent. UC Saros, I would never discount. He's been incredible. You know, he's one of the best goalies in the league, and even I think he's the smallest goalie in the league. To be the smallest goalie in the league to play that well is a testament to his athleticism and the way that he approaches the game. You know, so much respect to UC Saros. I think the Canucks understand. Yeah, they're inexperienced in all these things, but I do think that they know the moment. I think they understand where they are and how they got here and how they need to play in order to beat the Preds. And the Preds could make this a series. They could go 6-7. They could even win this series. This is one of the series where if you are going to predict an upset, this could very well be the series that gets it there. But I think Vancouver, especially with Demko back, I think Vancouver is going to make short work of Nashville, and they're gonna move on in five.
Okay, next up, the Dallas Stars and the Vegas Golden Knights. This is arguably the best playoff series on paper. It's either that or Dallas Winnipeg
round one.
Winnipeg,
by the way.
But it's also because Vegas just hasn't been great this year. Yeah. Vegas has been extremely injured. You know, they've missed Jack Eichel for long stretches of the season. Whether or not Mark Stone's going to play is to be determined. Alex Pietrangelo hasn't played since the first week of April. Zach Whitecloud has been injured for a large stretches of this season. Alec Martinez has been dinged up for large stretches of this season. If Vegas is right and they are able to come out of the gate clicking, they can definitely win this series. Sure. Not a hesitation in my mind. Vegas arguably has the highest ceiling of any team in the league. They won the Stanley Cup with the best 5-on-5 goal differential in the stat tracking era. They scored 66 even strength goals and their opponent scored 33 last year. That's really good. It's really hard to do that. Vegas's high-end guys are better than Dallas's high-end guys. You know, if Eichel and Stone are going, you're taking them over anyone on Dallas. And I say that as somebody who loves Jason Robertson and Roope Hintz. The only real question I have in this series is which of the two goalies is going to be better. I think, frankly, between Ottinger and Aiden Hill, whichever one of them plays better, I think that's the team that's going to win. I'm going to pick Dallas in seven. I do not feel great about that one.
I also have Stars in seven, and that's a series that's going to be an absolute bloodbath. That's going to be a series where literally anything could happen at any point, and you're just happy to not be a fan of either team for this series. Like, this is going to be mayhem. It's going to be mayhem, chaos, any other adjective, you know, any other word that you want to use as a synonym to those words. It's going to be must-see TV. And the Vegas Golden Knights have so much talent. It all depends on how Aiden Hill is going to play and how the injured Stars are going to play in the series. Because, you know, Mark Stone, you can make the LTIR joke and all these things. And, oh, he's back for game one. What a surprise. All these things. But at the end of the day, the players want to play. And a spleen injury is nothing to, you know, it's a really serious thing. It's not like, you know, he sprained his pinky and said, oh, okay, well, I'm out 6 weeks because salary cap, right? It's not how that happened. And even though we like to make jokes about it, this is a team that has the capability, because of all the talent on paper, to win it all. The issue becomes, okay, well, all this talent hasn't played together because they've been injured at different times of the season / haven't played much together because they've just got here. I think the Dallas Stars have the edge in the standpoint of this has been the team for multiple years now, essentially. The core of this team has been together for a long time. They know how to play together. They know how to get each other going. And I think the Knights have a lot of talent, but they are not going to fundamentally get it all to click in a 7-game series. And I think the Stars end up winning this one in 7.
LA Edmonton, we've seen this movie quite a few times. I like LA's team. If they were playing somebody else, I would be a little bit more inclined to pick them. They have a really good forward group. I know not everybody's a lunatic and watches a West Coast game after the East Coast games end, but, you know, Kempe, Fiala, that's 240 goal guys right there. Kopitar, still as good as ever. They've had really nice flashes from Quinton Byfield. Drew Doughty has really kind of reinvented himself as a defensive defenseman and kind of conceded a little bit offensively to be better defensively. Their only real question mark when you look at their lineup is in net. Other than that, that's a good team. But Edmonton's guys, man, Draisaitl on one leg 2 years ago had, what, 11 points in 7 games and was arguably the best player in a series that featured Connor McDavid. One of the things that I was looking up the other day, we were talking about it in regards to defensemen. The Oilers have played almost 4,000 minutes at even strength this year. They've played more than half of those minutes with at least one of McDavid or Draisaitl on the ice. They've played about 2,100 minutes or so of 4,000 minutes at 5-on-5 with at least one, if not both of those guys on the ice at the same time. There's maybe two other teams in the entire league that can do that, where they can separate their two best players and it be that impactful. Edmonton in 6. I think Edmonton, Edmonton's in a similar boat to the Rangers, where if it's not this year, it might never happen. Draisaitl is a pending unrestricted free agent this summer. McDavid is 2 years away. If Edmonton doesn't make it happen, I think there's a real chance Ken Holland is out, and whoever comes in's job after him is to kind of piece it back together and convince McDavid and Draisaitl to stay.
I have the same prediction, Edmonton in 6. LA is a good team, and like you said as well, if they were playing somebody else, maybe I'd give them more of a shot. McDavid and Draisaitl are not going to lose this series. LA could do whatever they want. They can throw the kitchen sink at these guys. McDavid and Draisaitl are not going to let the Oilers lose in the first round. It's just not going to happen, especially against an LA team that they've beaten before and they know how to beat. And it's there's not a whole lot that LA could do in my mind that would get me to flip the script of my prediction. I think LA has had a good year. They've kind of been up and down. They've had really good stretches, and then they would have the next few games where they kind of look really flat. And I have watched a fair amount of LA games because both of us are psychopaths. That's why we host a show together, because what makes one psychopath is good for doing a show, but you know what? What's even better? A second one. So we have two psychopaths doing the show. So I've watched a fair amount of LA games. They can scare Edmonton, but Edmonton, I feel like those, you know, the two behemoths over there are just simply not going to let this go. They're going to win the series.
Yeah. Last one. This is arguably the other. It's either the Dallas, Vegas, or Colorado, Winnipeg.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy Winnipeg finished ahead of Colorado in the standings. It's a testament to that group. I think this is the best iteration of the Jets probably since they've moved back to Winnipeg. I know that team a couple of years ago, the 2018 one, I thought that was the best team in the NHL that season. But this team in particular, they have committed to playing better defense. It has enabled Connor Hellebuck to stay at a high level because his workload isn't as taxing. Their forward group is as good as anybody's depth-wise. It's just their high-end guys aren't as good as Colorado's. What's Winnipeg going to do in the minutes Josh Morrissey isn't on the ice? I think that's probably the X factor in that series for me. If Winnipeg's going to make it a series, can they get one of their other defensemen to step up and be impactful? Not quite as much as Morrissey, but close enough. Colorado's got an argument for best team in the league. They have the guy who's going to win the Hart. They have a guy who's probably going to finish third in the Norris voting. Again, Colorado's goaltending has been not great this year. Georgiev's under 900 for the season. If they get passable goaltending, I think Colorado wins. If they get below passable, I think Winnipeg wins. I'm going to say Colorado wins that series in 7 games, but I definitely can see the Jets winning that series.
I have Avs in seven as well, and I feel awful for the Jets fans if that happens, because they deserve better than this. They really do. To have the season that they had, where so many things go right, Connor Hellebuyck is going to win the Vezina by a wide margin. I feel like he's been on a different planet all year long. He's been sensational for them and the driving force of that team. The Jets roster has been really good. They've been playing together. This is a really dangerous team, and they get bounced in the first round. That is awful. It's really, really awful for Jets fans and the organization. To get the Avs in the first round is just miserable. And by all accounts, and like you said, the Stars and Knights series is as coin flippy as you can get. The Jets could win this in five with four overtime wins. That could happen. Like, I'm not saying it can't. These two teams are so good that you could tell me any outcome except for a sweep. There's no shot. There's going to be a sweep in this series either way. Famous last words, I guess. But I can't reasonably logically see a sweep happening in this series. So you could tell me pretty much any outcome, and I'll believe it within reason. These are two of the best teams in the Western Conference facing off in the first round. It's such an awful draw for the Jets to have. And for the Avs as well. Like, the Avs have played, you know, pretty well all year, and now they get Winnipeg in the first round. That's bad for them as well. Whatever happens, whichever team loses, is like, that's going to be a disappointment. It's going to be an objective disappointment for them to make it, to play as well as they have, only to get bounced in the first round. Yeah, I understand the opponent is strong, but that doesn't make it hurt any less. It's still going to be a really tough pill to swallow for either team. I have the Avs in seven. You can convince me any which way, because of how talented the Jets are, that they eke out a series win, because Georgiev has been so mid the entire year, and Connor Hellebuyck has been so good. Maybe MacKinnon scores 2 points in seven games because Connor Hellebuyck has absolutely, you know, said, "You are not scoring on me. I will not let it happen. Try again next year." That could happen. It's such a coin flip. I have the Avs in seven, but it could really go either way.
I mean, there's a real argument that if the Avalanche had like slightly above average goaltending, they arguably could have won like three of the last four Stanley Cups, because that's been their undoing in their playoff runs a lot of the last couple times. You know, they won 2 years ago. Last year, their goaltending is what sank them against Seattle in round one. They were also coming off of a Stanley Cup final where you had roster attrition. In the bubble, they were down to Pavel Francois as their starting goalie because their two goalies higher on the depth chart were injured. Colorado, very well in that upper tier, right there with Dallas, with the Rangers, with Florida, as one of the best in the league. Final note, to quote a great philosopher, Michael Jerome Irvin, New York Rangers, what are you prepared to do? It's really simple. You let the Devils embarrass you last year.
We're losing recipes out here.
You let the Devils embarrass you last year. You were up 2-0. All you had to do was win 2 out of 4 against a team you had played well against in the regular season, even though the talent disparity, there was an argument. You will not get an easier first-round opponent in the NHL playoffs than the Washington Capitals, this version of them. You won't. There is not a worse team in the playoffs this year in either conference than the Capitals. There is an argument that the Capitals are the worst team to make the playoffs in the last 14 years. Take care of business. Move along, get to work. The next 2 months, God willing it's 2 months, are going to be long and taxing. Don't make this first round series longer and more taxing than it needs to be. That'll do it for this preview edition of Liberty Blue. Make sure you are subscribed wherever you get your podcast. Leave the show a 5-star review. Make sure if you are you are watching on YouTube, you hit the subscribe button, like the video, give us your series predictions in the comments, who you think is going to win what series. We will talk to you guys on Monday. Until then, let's go Rangers.